In the early morning light of Notting Hill, London, a kaleidoscope of costume and rhythm erupts. Celebrations born 60 years ago by Caribbean migrants, determined to claim space for their heritage. Thousands gather, exulting in bright feathers and beat-driven dances, yet beneath the jubilation lies a legacy forged from slavery, colonialism, and spiritual resilience. From the steel pan melodies of Trinidad and calypso lyrics of emancipation, to Garifuna cuisine in Chicago, Afro-Caribbean culture has navigated oceans and borders, reshaping identities worldwide. Each steel pan strike echoes resistance. Each spicy jerk chicken taste tells of survival. Each Rastafarian dreadlock speaks of ancient African ties. But how did these traditions, once suppressed, flourish into global movements influencing sports, music, politics, faith, and fashion? And what does that mean for the next generation? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1, Roots and Resistance. The story of Afro-Caribbean culture begins not with music or dance, but with survival. Centuries before carnivals spilled across the streets of London, Toronto, or Brooklyn, before reggae anthems ignited stadiums or jerk chicken perfumed foreign air, there was the Atlantic Ocean, wide, cruel, and full of stolen people. When European powers arrived in the Caribbean during the 15th and 16th centuries, they encountered indigenous peoples like the Taino, Arawak, and Kalinago. But within decades, these communities were decimated by disease, warfare, and enslavement. Colonizers turned the Caribbean into an economic engine for Europe, building sugar, tobacco, and cotton empires on the backs of enslaved Africans. Millions were brought from West and Central Africa through the brutal transatlantic slave trade, stripped of names, languages, and families, but not of their spirit. That spirit became the seed of Afro-Caribbean culture. In the darkness of cane fields and the silence of forbidden prayer, enslaved Africans began to build new identities. They blended traditions from different African tribes, adapted to new languages, and repurposed the tools. Sunday mornings. Caribbean-born pastors speak to the struggles of migration, racism, and resilience. The music is thunderous. The worship is alive, and the sense of belonging is undeniable. What unites all these spiritual expressions, traditional and Christian, ancient and modern, is the deep sense that the divine is near, that ancestors walk beside us, that struggle is sacred, that culture is not separate from spirit. This chapter of the Afro-Caribbean story reminds us that faith has never been one thing. It has been many voices, speaking across generations. It has been survival and sanctuary, fire and foundation. Whether whispered in a language no longer spoken or sung in a gospel choir, Afro-Caribbean faith continues to be a source of power. It moves through music, through healing, through protest, through prayer. It shapes how people name their children, bury their dead, and dream of justice. As we move forward, we'll explore how this spiritual foundation has fueled another powerful force, the language of art. In the next chapter, we turn to the painters, poets, musicians, and performers who have carried Afro-Caribbean identity onto the global stage, sometimes loud, sometimes subtle, but always rooted in truth. Chapter 4, Art as Identity, Afro-Caribbean Expression. Through creativity. To understand Afro-Caribbean culture, you must listen, really listen, to the art. It doesn't just entertain, it speaks, it remembers, it resists. Art has long been a lifeline for Afro-Caribbean people, woven into every drumbeat, brushstroke, stanza, and dance. It has served as a mirror, reflecting histories that textbooks erased, as a weapon, cutting through silence and stereotype, and as a compass, guiding communities through exile, injustice, and rebirth. In the early days of enslavement, when voices were silenced and names stripped away, expression became survival. Songs were sung in dialects that slaveholders couldn't understand. Rhythms were tapped into wooden floors or clapped in coded sequences. Even silence became a form of rebellion, loaded with meaning. That spirit of subversion never left. Centuries later, art is still one of the most powerful tools Afro-Caribbean communities use to tell their truth. Whether it's through literature, music, fashion, theater, or film, creative expression remains inseparable from identity, literature, memory on the page. The Caribbean has produced some of the most important writers in post-colonial literature, voices that speak across borders and generations. Writers like Kamau Brathwaite, Edwidge Danticat, Jean Reese, and Derek Walcott have turned the complexities of diaspora, memory, and trauma into poetry and prose. Their stories are deeply personal, yet globally resonant. They explore what it means to belong and not belong, to carry a mother tongue that's slowly slipping away, to hold two passports but still feel stateless. For Caribbean women, the pen has been especially powerful. Through literature, they've challenged patriarchy, colorism, and silence. They've written about exile, motherhood, migration, and longing. Each story becomes a thread in a larger cultural tapestry, tying personal experience to collective truth. Visual arts, painting the past, framing the future. Caribbean visual artists have long used paint, sculpture, photography, and mixed media to explore identity and challenge erasure. Their work is rich with symbolism: the sea, the drum, the mask, the shackled wrist, the open palm. In countries like Haiti, Cuba, and Jamaica, folk art traditions draw from African spirituality, colonial history, and daily life. Colors are bold. Faces are expressive. Nature and spirit coexist in the same canvas. Across the diaspora, new generations of Afro-Caribbean artists are blending traditional themes with contemporary commentary. They're using graffiti, digital art, an installation to speak on gentrification, climate change, racism, and mental health. Their studios are in London lofts, Toronto basements, and Brooklyn warehouses, but their art still pulses with island blood. What unites these creators is a deep need to document, to reclaim, and to provoke. Music, the global pulse. If there's one Afro-Caribbean art form that's traveled furthest, it's music. Reggae, calypso, dancehall, soca, zouk, compa, and reggaeton have all leapt from island streets to global stages. Reggae, born in Jamaica, became a soundtrack of rebellion and spirituality. Its rhythms are slow, steady, like a heartbeat. Its messages are clear: freedom, justice, and unity. Bob Marley remains an icon, not just for his music, but for his role as a cultural bridge between the Caribbean and the world. Calypso, with its playful melodies and biting lyrics, began as a way for enslaved people to mock their masters and comment on politics. It's witty, clever, and often laced with double meanings. Dancehall and soca bring energy to every carnival and block party. They are expressions of joy and release, rooted in the body. These genres celebrate Blackness without apology, loud, proud, and physical. But Afro-Caribbean music is also deeply spiritual. Drumming ceremonies in Haiti or Orisha, chants in Trinidad, are forms of sacred communication. Each note, each beat, connects past to present. Even in contemporary genres like hip-hop and electronic dance, Afro-Caribbean influence is everywhere. From rhythm to slang to sampling styles. DJs, MCs, and producers across the world borrow from Caribbean sound systems, echoing the traditions of Kingston's streets. Dance, memory in motion. In the Caribbean, dance is more than movement. It is history, prayer, flirtation, and protest. every sway of the hips, every stomp of the feet, carries ancestral echoes. African dance forms survived colonization by adapting, blending with European styles, evolving into new forms like quadrille, brouken, and limbo. In Afro-Caribbean households, children often learn these dances not in formal classes, but at family gatherings, street festivals, and church events. Carnival is perhaps the most visible expression of this legacy. On Carnival Day, bodies become storytelling tools. Through costume and movement, participants embody both celebration and resistance. Every feathered headdress and sequined bodysuit is a contradiction, both adornment and armor. And in the diaspora, Caribbean dance traditions have shaped contemporary styles. From Afrobeat to voguing, from dancehall queen contests to TikTok challenges, what was once hidden in back alleys is now front and center on global stages. Fashion, adornment as resistance style, has always been part of Afro-Caribbean expression. Head wraps, bold prints, gold jewelry, and dreadlocks are more than aesthetic choices. They are cultural declarations. Historically, enslaved Africans in the Caribbean used clothing to reclaim dignity. On Sundays, they dressed in their finest, even if their
finest was patched and worn. It was an act of defiance, saying, "I am more than what you've made of me." Today, Afro-Caribbean fashion continues that legacy. Designers blend African textiles with Caribbean silhouettes. Carnival costumes fuse tradition with fantasy. Everyday streetwear is infused with coded messages: Black pride, island heritage, and generational resilience. Hair, too, is part of this artistic expression. Braids, locks, Bantu knots, and natural textures all tell stories. Each style carries a lineage, a memory, a resistance to assimilation. Theater and film, telling our stories. Afro-Caribbean playwrights and filmmakers have created bold, genre-defying works that center Black life in all its complexity. Their stories often explore diaspora life, generational conflict, migration, and spirituality. In theater, plays are rooted in oral storytelling traditions, layered with humor, pain, and rhythm. They're performed in patois, Creole, and English, often shifting fluidly between all three. They speak to island audiences and global viewers alike. In film, Afro-Caribbean directors are rewriting the narrative, casting light on overlooked histories and everyday lives. They're challenging the exoticized view of the Caribbean often seen in mainstream media. They are saying, "We are not a backdrop, we are the story." Across all of these forms, literature, music, dance, fashion, visual art, and film, one thing is clear: art is not decoration in Afro-Caribbean culture. It is identity. It is resistance. It is memory made visible. It is how a scattered people remember their roots and shape their futures. And as we continue this journey, the next chapter will explore how Afro-Caribbean influence has reshaped global food culture, turning kitchens into cultural archives and every meal into a piece of history. Chapter 5. Food is Memory. Afro-Caribbean Cuisine. Around the world. To taste, Afro-Caribbean cuisine is to eat history. It is to bite into memory, to sip from survival. Every grain of rice, every spoonful of stew, every smoky piece of meat carries with it the story of a people who endured loss, created joy, and turned necessity into flavor. Food is one of the most powerful ways Afro-Caribbean culture has traveled. Recipes crossed oceans, shifted with
borders, and adapted to new lands, but they never forgot where they came from. In the beginning, Afro-Caribbean cuisine was born from constraint. Enslaved Africans were given the least desirable cuts of meat, the scraps, the cast-offs. They transformed these into dishes rich with flavor and tradition. They brought with them seeds, both literal and metaphorical, from West Africa: okra, black-eyed peas, pigeon peas, yams, plantains.
These ingredients became staples of the Caribbean table, fused with European techniques and indigenous knowledge to create something entirely new. Jamaica gave the world jerk, smoky, spicy meat, seasoned with thyme, Scotch bonnet peppers, and allspice, cooked over pimento wood. The method came from the Maroons, escaped enslaved people who used slow smoking to preserve meat while hiding in the mountains. What started as survival became a signature. Trinidad and Tobago offered roti, Indian flatbread stuffed with curried chicken, chickpeas, or goat, reflecting the island's African and Indian diasporas. The fusion of flavors tells a story of migration, labor, and adaptation. In Haiti, griot, crispy fried pork marinated in citrus and spices, shares a plate with diri ak junjun, a black mushroom rice that carries the deep, earthy taste of the land. These dishes are celebratory, often served at weddings, parties, and national holidays. But they are also steeped in ritual. A dish can be a blessing, a mourning, a homecoming. Throughout the region, stews and soups, callaloo, oxtail, Manish water, bring families together around shared pots. Each country has its version of rice and beans, rice and peas in Jamaica, arroz con gondoles in Puerto Rico, congrí in Cuba. These aren't just meals, they're bonds. They're how grandmothers pass on more than recipes. They pass on resilience, and the food always speaks in more than one language. Afro-Caribbean cuisine is not static. It continues to evolve, especially across the diaspora. In Brooklyn, you'll find Haitian restaurants serving picolés, spicy pickled vegetables, beside vegan versions of traditional dishes. In London, West Indian takeaways sell patties alongside fried plantain and ginger beer. In Toronto, food trucks offer Trini doubles on street corners during carnival season. In Miami, Cuban and Jamaican flavors dance together in hybrid dishes that could only be born from migration. What unites these meals is not just taste, it's memory. When Caribbean migrants settled abroad, food became one of the first things they clung to. Supermarkets didn't carry callaloo or ackee, so they grew it in backyards. Spice blends were made from scratch. Recipes were passed down through handwritten notes, phone calls back home, and quiet observation in the kitchen. Cooking became a way to remember, a way to reclaim. Restaurants emerged not just as businesses, but as cultural anchors. They became places to gather, to celebrate birthdays and mourn losses, to listen to reggae on the radio while eating curry goat. Menus became bridges between generations. Young people who didn't speak Creole fluently could still taste it in the food. A meal became a form of translation. For second and third generation Afro-Caribbeans, food was often the first cultural thread they could touch. Even if they didn't speak patois or know their ancestral village, they knew the smell of frying dumplings. They knew what went into a good pepper sauce. They knew that Sunday dinner wasn't just dinner, it was ceremony. And as the world became more connected, Afro-Caribbean cuisine began to influence global food culture in unexpected ways. Chefs of Caribbean descent began opening fine dining restaurants in cities like New York, London, and Paris, introducing traditional ingredients to new audiences. Sorrel found its way into cocktails. Breadfruit became a centerpiece of vegan menus. Scotch bonnet peppers appeared on food shows and in hot sauce boutiques. Social media played a role, too. Food bloggers, YouTube chefs, and TikTok creators from the Caribbean diaspora began sharing recipes and stories online, preserving and spreading culture with each upload. Young cooks documented how to make bami, saltfish fritters, palau, and cassava pone, often mixing traditional methods with modern twists. Yet even as Afro-Caribbean cuisine gained global appeal, it remained grounded in community. Pop-up kitchens, supper clubs, and street festivals became cultural events as much as culinary ones. Sharing a meal meant sharing a story. Food also became a form of resistance. In some spaces, it challenged stereotypes of Caribbean people as only spicy, loud, or exotic. It told deeper stories of colonization, indentured labor, and cultural fusion. A dish could say, "We are complex, we are rooted, we are here." In times of protest and political movement, food often played a quiet but essential role. Activists gathered over meals. Relief efforts after natural disasters often centered around communal cooking. Food trucks served as mobile meeting places. Soup pots became a form of solidarity. And in moments of personal grief or transition, births, funerals, weddings, Afro-Caribbean food offered comfort, continuity, and grace. Every cuisine tells a story. Afro-Caribbean cuisine tells many. It speaks of Africa, of exile, of heat and harvest. It tells of women stirring pots with stories in their hearts, of men chopping wood for fire before dawn, of children learning by watching, tasting, mimicking. It tells of islands shaped by waves and winds, and of cities reshaped by the people who brought those islands with them. To eat Afro-Caribbean food is to taste the past, the present, and the hope of a future that honors both. In our next chapter, we explore how these traditions have found their place not just in culture, but in activism and leadership, as Afro-Caribbean voices have risen in politics, social justice, and movements that have shaped the global stage. Chapter 6, From the Streets to the Stage, Afro-Caribbean Voices in Politics and Protest. The story of Afro-Caribbean people is not just one of music, food, or migration. It is also a story of defiance, a long and ongoing struggle to be heard, seen, and respected. And across the globe, from parliament floors to street marches, Afro-Caribbean voices have risen in powerful waves of protest, policy, and presence. Politics in the Caribbean has always been shaped by resistance. The region's nations, many of them small in size, but rich in cultural and intellectual capital, have spent generations fighting against the legacy of slavery, colonialism, and foreign control. But the resistance didn't stop at independence. It continued in the form of activism, education, and leadership that challenged injustice at home and abroad. Leaders like Marcus Garvey, born in Jamaica in 1887, lit the spark for a global movement. Garvey preached Black self-reliance, economic empowerment, and Pan-African pride. He founded the Universal Negro Improvement Association, the largest Black organization of its time, with chapters across the Caribbean, the Americas, and Africa. Garvey's ideas laid the foundation for later liberation movements and became central to the rise of Rastafarianism, which viewed him as a prophet. His message echoed in the hearts of those who had left the Caribbean, especially in cities like Harlem, where Caribbean migrants helped shape the political and cultural movements of the 20th century. Garvey taught that the struggle for dignity wasn't limited to one island. It was global. That lesson would continue to guide Afro-Caribbean communities for generations to come. In the UK, the Windrush generation laid more than railway tracks. They laid the groundwork for a civil rights movement. As Caribbean immigrants settled into British society, they faced housing discrimination, job inequality, and open racism. In response, they organized. One pivotal moment came in 1958 when race riots erupted in London's Notting Hill. The violence was aimed at Afro-Caribbean residents. But instead of retreating, community leaders responded with resilience. Claudia Jones, a Trinidad-born journalist and activist, founded the West Indian Gazette and organized the first Caribbean carnival in London, not just as a cultural celebration, but as an act of political healing. Claudia's work connected cultural pride to political power. She saw that dancing in the streets could be more than a festival. It could be a statement. That legacy lives on in Notting Hill Carnival, one of the world's largest street festivals, which grew out of tragedy and resistance. Elsewhere in Britain, activists like Darkus Howe and Olive Morris fought for civil rights and police accountability. They founded organizations, staged protests, and used media to tell their stories. Afro-Caribbean youth were often the first to speak out against systemic injustice, sometimes clashing with law enforcement, always challenging the status quo. In Canada, similar stories unfolded. Caribbean immigrants in Toronto and Montreal organized community associations, cultural centers, and political forums. They campaigned for better education, housing, and access to opportunity. Leaders like Dudley Laws, born in Jamaica, became central figures in the fight against police brutality and racial profiling in Canada. His voice echoed through courtrooms, press conferences, and community rallies, demanding justice for Black Canadians. Meanwhile, in the United States, Afro-Caribbean Americans played key roles in shaping the civil rights and Black Power movements. Many descendants of Caribbean migrants, like Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, born in Trinidad, rose to prominence as thinkers, strategists, and revolutionaries. Carmichael coined the phrase Black Power, calling for pride, self-determination, and radical change. These movements weren't just about confrontation. They were about reimagining society. They were about insisting that Afro-Caribbean people were not outsiders, but citizens, creators of culture, contributors to the economy, and carriers of history. And in the 21st century, that activism has not faded. It has adapted. Today, Afro-Caribbean voices are central in global conversations about race, identity, and justice. In London, members of parliament like Diane Abbott, born to Jamaican parents, have broken barriers in government. In the Caribbean itself, leaders like Mia Motley of Barbados have taken strong stands on climate justice and post-colonial reparations, calling out global powers with clarity and courage. Activism is no longer confined to street corners or protest signs. Afro-Caribbean youth have taken to digital platforms, podcasts, YouTube, and social media to amplify their voices. Movements like Black Lives Matter have deep Caribbean roots. Many organizers, especially in cities like Toronto and New York, are children or grandchildren of Caribbean immigrants. Their activism blends cultural heritage with contemporary demands for equality, accountability, and healing. In Jamaica, dancehall music has become a powerful tool for political critique. Artists like Vybz Kartel and Pop Guillen, despite controversy, often serve as mouthpieces for youth frustration and resistance. In Trinidad, Calypso and Soca continue to use humor and storytelling to address corruption, poverty, and social change. Even the celebration of Caribbean heritage has become a form of protest. Festivals like Carabana in Toronto, Junkanoo in the Bahamas, and Carnival across the islands are not just cultural events. They're declarations. They say, we are here. We matter. We will not be erased. Afro-Caribbean people have also taken their place in education, diplomacy, and media. Professors, filmmakers, poets, and journalists continue to challenge narratives, teach history, and reclaim stories that were ignored or distorted. But protest is not always loud. Sometimes it takes the form of preservation. A grandmother teaching her granddaughter to cook ackee and saltfish is resisting cultural erasure. A father telling stories of growing up in Port of Spain is planting memory. A youth organizer helping Black teens navigate the school system is building a future. Afro-Caribbean resistance has never fit into a single mold. It has been drums and pens, marches and menus, speeches and silences. It has happened on islands and in cities, in schools and in prisons, in churches and on the dance floor. It is, at its core, the refusal to disappear. And now, as the world grapples with climate crises, migration shifts, and the legacies of empire, Afro-Caribbean people continue to rise, resilient, resourceful, and ready. In the final chapter, we'll explore where all this leads, how Afro-Caribbean culture is shaping the future, not just in music or politics, but in how communities build, dream, and heal across generations. Chapter 7, Legacy and Future, where Afro-Caribbean culture is headed. Next, the legacy of Afro-Caribbean culture is not finished. It is alive, evolving, and pulsing forward with the same energy that carried it through oceans, chains, and centuries. It lives in the rhythm of the drum, in the spice of the stew, in the lilt of the language. But perhaps most importantly, it lives in the hands of those shaping tomorrow. As the children of the diaspora grow up in cities far from the islands, they inherit not just stories, but responsibility. They are born into a legacy built on survival, creativity, and truth. And now, they are the storytellers, the changemakers, the architects of a new cultural horizon. Across the globe, a new generation is reimagining what it means to be Afro-Caribbean in a modern world. They're blending tradition with technology. Young chefs are turning ancestral recipes into viral videos.
Of oppression into expressions of resistance. Music was not simply entertainment. It was survival. The beat of the drum, the call and response chant, the cadence of Creole dialects became cultural armor. Out of pain, art was born. Spirituality became a shield. African religious beliefs merged with Catholic saints to form syncretic faiths like Santeria, Vodou, and Orisha worship. These belief systems carried centuries of ancestral memory, often practiced in secret, always passed from elder to child. In some places, African cosmology was fused with indigenous and European customs to produce entirely new traditions, deeply Caribbean, yet unmistakably African in root. One of the most powerful forms of resistance was celebration. Carnival, today seen as joyful pageantry, began as a subversive ritual. In places like Trinidad, enslaved people used masquerade and street theater to mock plantation owners and reclaim space. They mimicked the elite's dress and mannerisms, but under the surface, these performances were bold declarations of defiance. They sang songs that carried hidden meanings. They danced with movements that told stories no overseer could understand. And when drums were banned, they beat rhythms into the earth or onto makeshift instruments made from bamboo and metal. The steel pan, now a symbol of Caribbean music, was born from this ingenuity. Originally fashioned from discarded oil drums, it became the heartbeat of resistance. Out of industrial waste came melody. Out of trauma, a new soundscape. Language evolved, too. Creole and Patois were not merely dialects. They were bridges. These hybrid languages allowed communication across African tribes and with European colonizers. But they also preserved cultural nuance. Proverbs carried wisdom. Slang carried truth. Every phrase was a thread in the fabric of Afro-Caribbean identity. As slavery was abolished in the 19th century, newly freed people across the Caribbean began to assert their cultural independence. In Haiti, the first successful slave revolt established a Black Republic. In Jamaica, Maroon communities continued to thrive, preserving African traditions untouched by colonial rule. Throughout the islands, African-rooted festivals, music, cuisine, and spiritual practices began to take center stage. DJs
are sampling ancient chants into futuristic soundscapes. Dancers are mixing Afro-Caribbean steps with hip-hop, K-pop, and Afro beats. Writers are penning stories that span Kingston to Kigali, London to Lagos, Toronto to Trinidad. This generation moves fluidly between cultures. They might wear their heritage on their sleeve or tuck it into quiet rituals. They speak in codes of migration, patois and slang, hashtags and hashtags. They are fluent in complexity, but they are also clear about one thing. They will not let their culture be erased, diluted, or dismissed. Caribbean heritage, once boxed in as exotic or tropical, is now being asserted as global. Not a side dish, not background music, but a force, a framework, a vision. In schools, teachers are integrating Caribbean history into global curricula. In universities, scholars are expanding Caribbean studies beyond colonial narratives, exploring environmental resilience, indigenous knowledge, and gender justice through a Caribbean lens. In the climate movement, Caribbean nations are emerging as moral leaders, small island states, often first to feel the impact of climate change, are sounding the alarm with wisdom born from generations of surviving storms, both natural and political. Leaders like Mia Motley of Barbados aren't just asking for change, they're demanding it. In wellness and healing spaces, Afro-Caribbean traditions are gaining recognition. Herbal medicine, ancestral rituals, communal care, and food as healing are becoming part of a wider global shift toward holistic, decolonized health practices. And in the arts, Afro-Caribbean creatives are thriving, not by mimicking the mainstream, but by recentering their own aesthetics, their own stories. Film, fashion, design, and music are all infused with Caribbean soul, echoing the past while pushing boundaries. Even in the digital world, Afro-Caribbean culture is expanding its reach. Podcasts share stories of a carnival origins and migration memories. TikToks teach how to tie a head wrap or cook plantain just right. Virtual festivals connect diasporic communities across time zones, keeping traditions alive in pixelated spaces. But the future isn't only about visibility. It's about equity. There is still work to be done. In many countries, Afro-Caribbean communities face systemic barriers, underfunded schools, racial profiling, gentrification, and political underrepresentation. Cultural pride cannot replace policy change. Identity cannot thrive without justice. That's why the most powerful expression of Afro-Caribbean legacy may be its refusal to separate culture from struggle. From the days of Maroon rebellions to modern climate forums, Afro-Caribbean people have insisted on a full, dignified humanity, one that sings, cooks, dances, fights, and leads. This culture is not just surviving. It's strategizing. Community gardens in Brooklyn preserve farming wisdom from Jamaica. Black-owned bookstores in Brixton stock novels from St. Lucia. Tech developers in Miami build apps for Creole language learners. Architects in Dominica design hurricane-resilient homes using ancient techniques with modern tools. Afro-Caribbean legacy is not frozen in time. It is constantly adapting. And with that adaptability comes a deeper truth. The Caribbean is not just a place. It is a perspective, a way of being, a rhythm you carry, even when you leave. It teaches that identity is both rooted and mobile, that healing takes time, that joy is a form of resistance, that the drumbeat can be as powerful as the ballot box. And so, the story continues, not on a straight line, but in a spiral, forward and backward, inward and outward, always circling around the truth that culture is not something you visit. It is something you live, whether in Kingston or London, Port of Spain or Paris, Afro-Caribbean people are writing the next chapter. One meal, one protest, one dance, one conversation at a time. Their culture will not fade. It will transform. It will challenge. It will rise, just as it always has. Just in private homes, but in public squares. This was not simply cultural survival. It was cultural flourishing. By the 20th century, Afro-Caribbean influence began to spread beyond the islands. Migration became a new chapter in the cultural journey. Waves of Caribbean people settled in cities like New York, London, Miami, and Toronto. They brought their traditions with them, not as relics of the past, but as living, breathing extensions of identity. In Britain, Afro-Caribbean immigrants faced racism and discrimination, but also built vibrant communities. They formed bands, opened restaurants, started radio stations, and held street festivals. What began as isolated cultural events grew into major movements. Notting Hill Carnival in London, for instance, emerged from a community response to race-based violence. Today, it is one of the largest street festivals in the world, a dazzling celebration of Afro-Caribbean heritage. In North America, reggae and ska found eager listeners. Rastafarian philosophy, rooted in African pride and spiritual awakening, influenced music, politics, and fashion. Dreadlocks became a symbol of rebellion and divine connection. Marcus Garvey's Pan-African vision, born in Jamaica, inspired leaders across the world, from Malcolm X to Kwame Nkrumah. Even in the culinary world, Afro-Caribbean culture left its mark. Dishes like jerk chicken, roti, kalalu, and saltfish traveled across oceans. Ingredients native to Africa, like okra and yam, fused with New World produce to create bold flavors and nourishing meals. Food became more than sustenance. It became storytelling, history you could taste. The rhythms of the Caribbean, the calypso, the mento, the soca, echoed into diasporic neighborhoods, and from there into pop culture. Artists like Bob Marley, Celia Cruz, and Mighty Sparrow didn't just entertain, they educated. Their music carried the pulse of the past and the promise of a liberated future. What's remarkable is that none of this happened in isolation. Afro-Caribbean culture is inherently communal. It grows through collaboration, conversation, and continuity. Elders teach youth. Drummers pass patterns down. Dancers imitate movements that once marked rites of passage in distant African villages. Even as generations move further from their ancestral lands, the culture endures. In hair salons and churches, in dance studios and backyard barbecues, the legacy lives on. Afro-Caribbean culture is not just a reflection of where people have been. It's a map of where they're going. In every chant, every beat, every vibrant parade costume, there is a story of pain transformed into pride. A people once scattered across ships and shores are now bound together by something deeper than borders, an inheritance of resilience, rhythm, and reverence. And as we begin to explore the global impact of this culture in the chapters ahead, it's important to remember that it all began with resistance, the will to survive, the power to create, the courage to remember. That is the root. That is the beginning. Chapter 2, Migration and Diaspora. Building Identity. Abroad. When Afro-Caribbean people left their island homes, they carried more than suitcases. They carried rhythms, recipes, memories, and faith. And as they stepped onto new soil in North America, the UK, and parts of Europe, they began the lifelong work of building new lives without losing their roots. The migration of Afro-Caribbean people took place in waves, each shaped by global forces, war, labor shortages, economic collapse, and the enduring search for opportunity. After World War II, Britain opened its doors to workers from its colonies to help rebuild a war-torn country. The first major group arrived in 1948 aboard the Empire Windrush, docking in Tilbury with around 500 men and women from Jamaica, Trinidad, and other islands. They were nurses, teachers, craftsmen, and ex-soldiers, but to many in Britain, they were strangers. What greeted them was not always welcoming. In the narrow streets of London, Caribbean migrants were met with suspicion and sometimes hostility. Rooms for rent bore signs that read, "No blacks, no Irish, no dogs." They were often forced into the least desirable neighborhoods, working low-paid jobs in factories, hospitals, and transit systems. And yet, amid the struggle, they built vibrant communities. In Brixton, Notting Hill, and Handsworth, Caribbean families opened corner shops, formed churches, and hosted basement parties known as blues dances. These spaces weren't just for fun. They were sanctuaries where people could speak their own language, play their own music, and pass on traditions to their children. The sounds of calypso and ska leaked through brick walls and echoed down rainy English lanes. Culture became a shield, a bridge, and a home. In the United States, migration followed a different path. Some Afro-Caribbean immigrants had been arriving since the late 19th century, especially to places like Harlem in New York City, where communities from the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Haiti, and the English-speaking Caribbean settled. In the early 20th century, Harlem was a cultural hub where African Americans and Caribbean migrants came together to form the Harlem Renaissance, an explosion of Black literature, politics, music, and art. Figures like Claude McKay, Marcus Garvey, and Arturo Schoenberg were key voices in this movement, their Caribbean heritage shaping their outlook on Black liberation and identity. In Canada, Caribbean migration surged during the 1960s and 70s. Toronto became home to a growing Jamaican and Trinidadian population, whose influence can still be felt in the city's slang, food, music, and summer events like Caribana. Just like in London and New York, these new arrivals often faced discrimination in housing, employment, and schools. But they responded by organizing. They started community newspapers, formed advocacy groups, and celebrated their heritage loudly and publicly. Migration is not just about movement. It's about adaptation, about taking what you know and reshaping it to fit unfamiliar surroundings. Afro-Caribbean migrants mastered this. Churches in Brooklyn began mixing Caribbean gospel with American soul. Hair salons in Montreal became cultural hubs where stories were exchanged along with braids and blowouts. Supermarkets in Birmingham and Toronto began stocking Callaloo, Ackee, and Sorrel alongside apples and cereal. Even the language adapted. Jamaican patois began slipping into the everyday slang of non-Caribbean youth across global cities. But beyond the surface, something deeper was happening. The children of migrants, first-generation Afro-Caribbeans, stood at a cultural crossroads. At home, they were raised with island values, discipline, faith, family, and pride in their heritage. Outside, they were shaped by the urban cultures of their new countries. Many faced identity struggles. Were they British or Jamaican? American or Trinidadian? Some were told they weren't Black enough, others that they weren't Caribbean enough. These tensions often created new hybrid identities. Caribbean British, Caribbean American, Afro-Caribbean Canadian. Music played a central role in shaping these blended identities. In London, second-generation youth fused reggae with punk and electronic sounds, giving rise to genres like grime and jungle. In New York, Caribbean immigrants helped lay the foundations for hip-hop. DJ Kool Herc, a Jamaican-born innovator, brought his sound system skills to Bronx block parties in the 1970s, setting the stage for a global music revolution. Caribbean cadence and rhythm gave birth to breakbeats, sampling, and the MC DJ culture that defined an era. These musical contributions weren't just creative, they were political. Lyrics addressed poverty, racism, police brutality, and cultural pride. Young Afro-Caribbeans used music to push back against marginalization, to speak truth the mainstream refused to hear. Their voices rose from basements and street corners, echoing the same defiance that had shaped Carnival back home. Across the Atlantic, similar expressions took root. In Toronto's Scarborough and Jane Finch neighborhoods, Afro-Caribbean youth created spoken word, hip-hop, and dancehall hybrids. In Miami's Little Haiti and Little Havana, Afro-Caribbean traditions blended with Cuban and Latin influences, producing vibrant new expressions in food, fashion, and street art. But the diaspora wasn't just about music. It was about movement, of thought, of resistance, of culture. Afro-Caribbean scholars, artists, and activists began to influence global conversations on race, identity, and post-colonialism. Thinkers like Stuart Hall, born in Jamaica and based in Britain, challenged Western ideas about culture and power. His work helped redefine what it meant to be Black in a world shaped by colonization and migration. Meanwhile, Caribbean women emerged as powerful voices in literature, politics, and education. Writers like Jean Rhys, Edwidge Danticat, and Andrea Levy told stories of exile, belonging, and memory. Their work explored what it meant to be a woman of Caribbean descent in a foreign land, to be shaped by multiple histories, yet often unseen by both. The cultural identity of the Afro-Caribbean diaspora was, and still is, layered and evolving. It is rooted in the rhythms of the islands, but shaped by the streets of foreign cities. It is a culture that resists erasure, that finds power in memory and pride in difference. And through all this, the diaspora has never been static. It continues to move, to expand, reshape, and redefine itself. In the digital age, Afro-Caribbean identity now lives across continents and timelines. Social media, streaming platforms, and podcasts allow culture to travel instantly. A song written in Kingston can go viral in Berlin. A carnival costume in Trinidad can inspire fashion in Seoul. A grandmother's recipe in Barbados can be cooked in a Brooklyn apartment by someone who's never seen the sea. The story of Afro-Caribbean migration is not just a tale of leaving home. It is a story of building new homes without forgetting where you came from. These communities transform the cities they settled in. But perhaps more importantly, they reshape the meaning of home, culture, and identity itself. And as we move into the next chapter, we'll explore the spiritual lifeblood that flows through Afro-Caribbean communities around the world, how belief systems, both traditional and blended, have shaped not just private rituals, but public movements. Chapter 3, Spirit and Survival. Afro-Caribbean Faith in the Modern World. Faith has always been a lifeline for Afro-Caribbean communities, a quiet power that carried them across centuries of hardship, migration, and reinvention. But this faith was never one thing. It was layered, syncretic, and deeply personal. At its heart was survival, but it grew into something much more, a philosophy, a ritual, a cultural identity passed from generation to generation. In the Caribbean, the spiritual journey began with African cosmology. Enslaved people brought with them a wide spectrum of belief systems: Yoruba, Akan, Congo, and others, that spoke of ancestors, orishas, and sacred forces governing nature and the human spirit. These traditions emphasized balance, ritual, and community. They were deeply spiritual but also practical, offering explanations for illness, dreams, success, and
misfortune. But colonialism forced change. Under European rule, especially Spanish and French colonizers, African religions were outlawed and Catholicism was imposed. Yet the enslaved people did not abandon their beliefs. They adapted them. In secret, they fused their gods with Catholic saints, performed rituals in hidden places, and spoke in codes. Out of this resistance came new forms of faith: Vodou in Haiti, Santeria in Cuba, Obeya in Jamaica, and Orisha, worship across several islands. These weren't watered-down versions of African spirituality. They were complex systems built on survival. Every chant, candle, and symbol carried layers of meaning. The ancestors were honored. Nature was sacred. Spirits were called not just to heal or protect, but to remember, to hold on. After slavery ended, these belief systems didn't disappear, they transformed. In Haiti, Vodou became deeply entwined with national identity. Its rituals helped inspire the Haitian Revolution, the only successful slave-led revolt that established an independent Black Republic. In Jamaica, Obeya practitioners were both feared and respected, often operating on the fringes, but holding powerful influence in matters of healing and justice. And yet, these faiths were often misunderstood by outsiders and sometimes by younger generations raised in Western-style churches.
they were labeled as superstition or black magic, painted as dark and dangerous. But for many Afro-Caribbean families, these traditions remained sacred. They weren't just religion, they were history encoded in ceremony. At the same time, Christianity took deep root across the Caribbean, especially Protestantism. Missionaries arrived in large numbers during the 19th and 20th centuries, spreading Anglican, Baptist, Methodist, and later Pentecostal denominations. These churches became central to community life. They offered not only spiritual guidance, but also schools, social services, and leadership training. For many Afro-Caribbean migrants, especially those arriving in London, New York, or Toronto, the church became a foundation in unfamiliar cities. It was a place to gather, to grieve, to celebrate, to organize. Sunday service wasn't just about sermons. It was about connection, about music, about home. Gospel choirs echoed African call and response patterns. Preachers used rhythms that mirrored traditional griots. Testimonies resembled ancestral storytelling. Even when speaking the language of King James, many Afro-Caribbean congregants brought the heartbeat of Africa into the pews. Rastafarianism emerged in the early 20th century as a powerful Afro-Caribbean spiritual movement rooted in Black pride, African repatriation, and resistance to colonial norms. It wasn't just a religion, it was a worldview. Rastas rejected materialism, emphasized a natural lifestyle, and viewed Ethiopia and Africa as the spiritual homeland. Haile Selassie, the Ethiopian emperor, was seen as divine. The dreadlocks worn by followers symbolized the line of Judah and resistance to Babylon, the metaphor for Western oppression. Ital food, rooted in clean plant-based eating, echoed the ancestral respect for the earth. Rastafarianism's global rise was deeply tied to music. Bob Marley became its most recognizable voice, using reggae to spread spiritual and political messages. His lyrics spoke of oppression, exile, freedom, and faith, not in abstract terms, but grounded in lived Afro-Caribbean experience. Through him and others, Rastafari reached far beyond the Caribbean, influencing movements for justice across continents. In recent decades, Afro-Caribbean spirituality has continued to evolve. In cities across the diaspora, young people are reclaiming ancestral practices once dismissed as taboo. Ceremonies honoring orishas are being held in Brooklyn apartments and London basements. Herbal knowledge, drumming, and divination are being taught again, blending with modern wellness culture and Black consciousness. This resurgence is not nostalgia, it's restoration. It's part of a broader movement to decolonize the mind, to reconnect with what was nearly erased. In academic circles, scholars are studying Afro-Caribbean faiths with new respect. In art and film, these spiritual symbols are being reimagined. And in everyday life, more and more descendants of the diaspora are lighting candles for ancestors, speaking names aloud, and calling on old gods with new voices. Meanwhile, mainstream Christian denominations continue to thrive across Afro-Caribbean communities. Pentecostal churches in Brooklyn and Brixton are packed on Sabaon.